Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. This Thanksgiving weekend, as we all reflect on what we have to be thankful for, the East County Magazine show thanks all of our wonderful listeners and the many volunteers who work tirelessly throughout the year to bring you news in the public interest here in East County and the San Diego region, as well as national stories that impact the lives of people in our region and across the nation. San Diego is home to more Native American tribes than any other county in America, and nearly all of them have been actively involved in providing support for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's efforts to protect clean water supplies while standing up against an oil pipeline in North Dakota. Today we'll open our show with a special report on violence against those water defenders, as they call themselves, and some reinforcements coming soon as veterans across the nation mobilize to protect the Standing Rock Sioux. Then on Green Scene, we'll tell you about some exciting hikes on trails and peaks locally, all part of the Anza Borrego Desert Foundation's special anniversary celebration. Next up, we'll have an exclusive East County Magazine special report on a massive wind turbine that collapsed at the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility, the latest in a series of major mechanical failures at the site, and why residents are concerned about public safety. Then, on our Capitol Report, learn why Green Party candidate Jill Stein has launched a recall effort in three swing states, and what a prominent election integrity professor has to say about the possibility that Russia may have hacked the U.S. presidential election. Hear about a settlement deal reached in the Trump University lawsuit right here in San Diego. Our newsmaker interview today is with Anthony Mostardo, director of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, now celebrating its 15th anniversary. He'll share some details and a sneak preview of their Chansons de Noël holiday concert that's coming up next Sunday, December 4th. Later on, we'll tell you about a Pearl Harbor survivor who will be speaking in Spring Valley this Saturday. We'll also have a health report on a recall of a popular brand of hummus products that you don't want to eat if you've got these items in your refrigerator. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about the top festivals and events coming up across East County, from a pomegranate festival at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona this weekend to holiday celebrations in towns across East County over the coming month. On our sports report, we've got some big news for local fans to cheer about. East County hometown hero Jimmy Johnson just won his 7th Sprint NASCAR Championship, setting an all-time record. Then we'll have a weather update for you on the outlook for the rest of this Thanksgiving weekend. And on Vines and Wines, hear about some new rules aimed at protecting public health and expanding opportunities for growth at our local wineries and breweries, serving up food with those vintages and beers. We'll also share a story about a local horse rescue group in need after a thief stole 2 golf carts needed to care for their rescued animals. And finally, as we start the holiday season, we'll have a little country Christmas music for you from the U.S. Army Band. So stay tuned for all of these stories today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, where East County matters. And please, from all of us to all of you, enjoy a safe and happy Thanksgiving weekend.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This Thanksgiving weekend, as most of us enjoy a turkey dinner in the comfort of our homes, surrounded by our families, Native Americans are taking a stand for clean water and against the Dakota Access Pipeline at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in Cannonball, North Dakota, enduring bitterly cold weather, camped out in teepees. Worse, they are being subjected to horrific treatment at the hands of law enforcement officers who have fired water cannons, rubber bullets, and tear gas, as well as other weapons, against peaceful tribal members seeking to protect their drinking water supply and their cherished sacred sites. But soon, the Standing Rock Sioux will be getting reinforcement. Nearly 1,000 U.S. military veterans have signed up to join Veterans for Standing Rock. On December 4th through 7th, They will deploy to the Standing Rock Sioux Indian Reservation to support Native Americans who are standing up for clean water and halting the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. The effort is being organized by Wesley Clark Jr., a veteran who is the son of retired four-star Army General Wesley Clark Sr., the former Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. Tribes fear that the pipeline could burst and contaminate the Missouri River, which feeds into the Mississippi River. Protests over the pipeline have drawn thousands of people from across the nation over the last several months. The activists, who call themselves water protectors, have faced extreme brutality at the hands of a militarized police force. Dramatic video this week shows police spraying a water cannon at people in below-freezing temperatures. Use of a water cannon, reminiscent of the fire hoses blasted on civil rights protesters in the South during the 1960s, could have lethal impacts here due to the frigid weather. 300 people have been injured and 26 hospitalized this week, including a 21-year-old girl whose arm bone was shattered, reportedly by a concussion grenade. General Clark's son asks, if we don't stop it, who will? The Veterans for Standing Rock event page on Facebook advises veterans to bring body armor, gas masks, and earplugs in case a sound cannon is used, but please, no weapons. The site invites veterans everywhere to join the effort to assemble as a peaceful, unarmed militia at the Standing Rock Indian Reservation on December 4th through 7th and defend the water protectors from assault and intimidation, their words, at the hands of the militarized police force and Dakota Access Pipeline Security. Clark has also launched a GoFundMe page for the deployment to provide materials and support to all veterans wanting to join the Standing Rock protest from around the country. And so far, over $150,000 has been raised in just one day. The pipeline would carry over 500,000 barrels a day of crude oil beneath the Missouri River. Initially, it was slated to go through Bismarck, a mostly white community, but after objections over possible water contamination there were raised, the route was changed to go on land sacred to the Standing Rock Sioux in an area where a pipeline leak or burst would contaminate drinking water for not only the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, but several other tribes as well. The tribes contend this is racism on its face, NPR reports. Construction has been delayed for months as thousands of activists, including hundreds of tribes across America, plus environmental groups, labor, and now veterans, have joined in the fight to protect drinking water and sacred Native American sites. Tribal members have been arrested and roughly handled by police, even while conducting prayer circles or attempting to reach their sacred sites. Tribes contend the government has failed in its duty to consult with the Standing Rock Sioux and protect them. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has not even issued a final easement required for construction, and President Barack Obama recently said he will consider rerouting the pipeline. Obama declared November to be National Native American Month. But those words ring hollow, since the Obama administration has done nothing to stop the heavy-handed tactics by law enforcement and private security officers hired by Energy Transfer Partners against the brave water defenders standing up against oppression in a story that has made headlines internationally with photos as dramatic and iconic as the image of a lone man standing down a tank in Tiananmen Square. Dave Archambault, chairman of the Tribal Council of the Standing Rock Sioux, has said, "Every time there's something like a confrontation and life is being threatened, I think the government is going to do what they can to try to end this before someone gets killed." He believes aggression by law enforcement has been intentional, aimed at forcing the government to give the easement. Now, he warns, it's escalating more and more to the point where law enforcement is not really concerned with human life. Activists and journalists at the scene have reported the unarmed water defenders have remained peaceful. Authorities contend that propane tanks and burning logs are weapons, though the tribes say these items are needed to stay warm in sub-freezing temperatures. The story of U.S. veterans taking a stand to join the Standing Rock Sioux has been picked up by major U.S. and international media, including CNN, NBC, and Reuters. Senator Al Franken has called on the Department of Justice to protect the safety and First Amendment rights of Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. In a letter to Attorney General Loretta Lynch, Franken wrote, "Native American populations have struggled for decades under the complex burden of historical trauma. I urge you to do everything in your power to prevent further escalation of violence." Some who were detained have also faced degrading treatment, including young women who were strip-searched, people left naked in cells overnight, and confined in what some describe as dog cages. The American Civil Liberties Union Policy Director in North Dakota, Jen Cook, says it's absolutely a blatant disregard for the safety and humanity of unarmed protesters. In combination with other tactics, it's a misuse of less than lethal weaponry, she says, of the water cannons. It's unjustifiable. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former presidential candidate, spoke at a National Day of Action for Standing Rock. He called for President Obama to halt construction and declare Standing Rock a national monument, also warning about the incoming president-elect. Here's an excerpt of what Senator Sanders had to say.
We say to President Obama, in any and every way you can, stop the pipeline. Other approaches, such as declaring Standing Rock a federal monument, let's do that. We have a new president coming in. Who wants this country to become more dependent on fossil fuel, who is endangering the lives of our children and our grandchildren and future generations. What we have got to tell Mr. Trump and everybody else, we are not going silently into the night. We are not going to allow a pipeline to endanger the clean water that millions of people depend upon.
The Bernie Sanders Brigade has been organizing relief supplies for those encamped at Standing Rock, including the San Diego chapter. Nearly all local tribes here in San Diego County are participating in efforts to support the Standing Rock Sioux, including financial donations and sending members to join activists at the front lines. Local Kumeyaay tribes have also organized multiple caravans of relief supplies, led by Bobby Wallace of Barona, who we've previously interviewed on our show. Kumeyaay bird singers from San Diego also traveled to North Dakota to show solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux, and here's what that sounded like. President-elect Donald Trump has made no statement on the situation. However, the Guardian newspaper in England reports that Trump has invested in Energy Transfer Partners, the operators of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and in addition, the company's chief executive donated over $100,000 to support Trump's presidential campaign. If you want to help the Standing Rock Sioux, you can visit standwithstandingrock.net to sign a White House petition, get phone numbers to call the White House, or make a donation to buy supplies and fund legal services for the water protectors. And that site again is standwithstandingrock.net. This Thanksgiving Day, it's not enough to recall a sanitized historical tale of Indians happily sharing a feast with pilgrims at Plymouth Rock. Protecting the right to clean water, whether in Flint, Michigan, or Cannonball, North Dakota, is important to us all. To truly honor our Native Americans, perhaps all Americans should be taking a stand right now on behalf of the Standing Rock Sioux. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
In celebration of Anza Borrego Foundation's 50th anniversary, the Anza Borrego Foundation and Anza Borrego Desert State Park are inviting visitors to complete 2 5-hike challenges on some of the most famous and infamous peaks and trails in the region. 5 Hikes for 50 Years is a campaign to introduce visitors to the many wonders of California's largest state park. The family-friendly trails will be completed independently by hikers and range from the popular and well-traveled Borrego Palm Canyon Nature Trail to less visited hikes in more remote areas of the park, such as Mountain Palm Springs. These hikes are free, though there is a per-vehicle entry fee at one of the sites. The 5 hikes for 50 years are the Borrego Palm Canyon Nature Trail, the Slot, Pictograph Trail, Calkite Mine, and Mountain Palm Springs Loop. When visitors finish all 5 hikes, they will receive a signed certificate from the park and a commemorative 50th anniversary sticker. Using the 5 hikes for 50 years participant packet, hikers will need to complete all 5 hikes in any order by June 1st of next year, then take a selfie shot at an identifiable location unique to each hike. Once all 5 hikes have been completed, hikers must send an email containing their selfies or group photos to info@theabf.org. Detailed information on how to participate and complete the hiking challenge can be found at theabf.org/5hikes. To celebrate its 50th anniversary, Anza Borrego Foundation has also planned guided hikes to 5 of the most iconic peaks in Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Hikers will be led by fitness enthusiast and popular hike leader Mike Puzo for Mike's hikes during the desert season. The trails, Topping Whale, Indian Head, Villager, Sombrero, and Sunset Peaks, are strenuous, fast-paced hikes intended for experienced hikers in good physical condition. All hikes will travel off-trail with a significant amount of elevation gain and loss. There are fees for Mike's hikes, and you can get details on these at theabf.org/5peaks. Additional anniversary programming and events will be announced by Anza Borrego Foundation throughout the desert season. To learn more, plan your visit, become a member or volunteer, visit theabf for anzaborregofoundation.org, theabf.org. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Rebecca Williamson with news about a 500-foot-tall wind turbine at the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility that collapsed on Monday, November 21st, spewing debris and 3 blades, each weighing many tons, across the desert floor. East County Magazine photographer Jim Pelly, an Ocotillo resident, says the other 111 turbines kept spinning for over an hour before a pattern official arrived and the entire project was de-energized. Pelly told East County Magazine that the ground was not saturated from rainfall and the foundation is intact, raising serious questions as to what caused the massive turbine to collapse and whether others could have a design or engineering flaw that could lead to similar failures. Winds were only 15 miles an hour or less during the 3 hours before the collapse. The tower bent into the wind, not away from it, and did not collapse at a joint in the 3-piece tower, but in between. Edie Harmon was outside her home 5 miles south of the wind farm around 10:30 a.m. when she heard the turbine collapse. It sounded like a massive explosion. I thought a military jet had crashed into the ground, she said in a phone interview with East County Magazine. When she drove home Monday night after the project was de-energized, Harmon said, I didn't see lighting on any of them. I sure hope we don't have a low-flying border patrol plane. Harmon also voiced concerns over leakage of toxins into the ground and the aquifer below that provides the town's drinking water after such a major explosion. One witness told Pelly that blades were turning as the turbine collapsed and may have struck the tower. Pelly, an aerospace engineer, said Pattern put larger blades than the towers were originally built to hold in order to maximize production. He speculated that bending back and forth under heavier blades, which are on all the turbines, may have caused the tower's central section to collapse. While this turbine is in a remote location, others are located close to major roadways, including Interstate 8, as well as homes, a school, and public trails on the Federal Bureau of Land Management property. Park Ewing, who has a turbine near his home, posted on Facebook, "Are they going to wait for someone to be killed before these unreliable monsters are decommissioned?" A reference to the fact that the project has failed to meet wind production capacity projections every year since it was built. An hour after the collapse, East County Magazine contacted the Bureau of Land Management, which was unaware of the accident. We also contacted Pattern Energy at its La Jolla headquarters, but the company did not respond to our call. However, Ocotillo Wind later posted a statement on its website stating that the turbine fell within the designated setback zone and no one was injured. Officials said they are working closely with the turbine manufacturer Siemens to identify the root cause of the failure, and a full investigation is also underway.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update in the already bizarre presidential race. Earlier this week, election security experts urged presidential candidates to seek recounts in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan due to anomalies that could indicate hacking by Russia or someone else. Hillary Clinton's campaign has thus far not sought a recount in any state. But now, Green Party candidate Jill Stein has launched a fundraising page for recounts in those states. So far, she has raised over $4 million, enough to fully fund a recount in Wisconsin, and she's well on the way toward attaining the estimated $6 to $7 million needed for recounts in all three states, including filing fees, attorney costs, and funding recount observers. Now, these concerns are valid, and here's why. First, Russian operatives already have hacked an election in the Ukraine. The wrong winner was prevented from taking office only because Ukrainian officials discovered the vote-stealing software, says J. Alex Halderman, a professor of computer science at the University of Michigan. His election technology class regularly tests and succeeds in hacking into voting machines that are used in the U.S. Now, if a foreign government or other hacker wanted to rig our election, they would most likely identify states expected to have close margins and then insert malware into voting machines to shift votes to the hacker's preferred candidate. A card from a single machine with the malware could later infect a central tabulator, changing votes for an entire county. The program can erase itself after the election, leaving no trace electronically. But on machines with paper trails, an audit or recount of those papers can expose changed votes. Now, about 70% of U.S. voters cast votes on machines with paper trails, according to Halderman. Each state sets its recount rules. Florida won't allow candidates to request recounts. Only its Secretary of State may do so. But most states do allow candidates to ask for recounts. However, the cost can be millions of dollars per state in a presidential race. Halderman notes that the 2016 U.S. presidential election has already had hacks of voter registration systems in at least two states, Arizona and Illinois, as well as hacks into the Democratic National Committee and into the email account of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, John Podesta, whose emails were leaked to the public. Federal agencies have stated they believe the Russian government was behind all of those cyber attacks. Now, even Halderman is not saying that this election was hacked. Perhaps the pollsters were simply wrong in their predictions, but the only way to make sure that it wasn't is to hand count votes in key states with paper trails. U.S. elections have been hacked in the past. I won a National Journalism Prize for exposing vulnerabilities of electronic voting machines in an article titled Monkey Business some years back in San Diego City Beat. That coverage led to my interview with a whistleblower inside the Diebold voting machine company, who shared details on how he believed hacking was done in a Georgia gubernatorial race. I shared those details with California's Secretary of State back then, and she promptly decertified those Diebold paperless voting machines. My coverage also led to a shareholder lawsuit against Diebold and the resignation of its CEO, who had promised to deliver the presidential election to George W. Bush. And by the way, he was the campaign chairman in his state. Now, in 2004, the Green Party's Cobb-LaMarche presidential campaign ticket demanded a recount in Ohio. Because of their efforts, an election administrator actually went to jail. The action also exposed the profound problems with electronic voting machines, and that helped launch an election integrity movement. The Green Party platform calls for publicly owned, open-source voting equipment that would be deployed across the nation to ensure high national standards, performance, transparency, and accountability, use verifiable paper ballots, and institute mandatory automatic random precinct recounts to ensure a high level of accuracy in election results, according to their webpage. A statement issued by Stein on her recount effort reads, after a divisive and painful presidential race, reported hacks into voter and party databases and individual email accounts were causing many to wonder if our election results are reliable. These concerns need to be investigated before the 2016 presidential election is certified. Now, it would take a flip in all three states and a shift of about 50,000 votes overall for Hillary Clinton to gain more electoral votes than Donald Trump. She's already won the popular vote, currently leading by about 2 million votes nationwide. But there are anomalies. At least one county reportedly had thousands more presidential votes tallied than total votes cast. Stein has until Monday to raise enough funds for a full recount, which really means a hand count of votes in Michigan and until Wednesday in Pennsylvania. Now, Stein received less than 2% in each of these states. And she says the recounts aren't about helping Clinton to win, but rather assuring the integrity of the voting system and confidence in the outcome in states with razor-thin margins. She concludes, these recounts are part of an election integrity movement to attempt to shine a light on just how untrustworthy the U.S. election system is.
President-elect Donald Trump has agreed to pay $25 million to settle class-action lawsuits representing thousands of students who alleged fraud and racketeering involving the now-defunct Trump University. The settlement announcement Friday came just an hour before U.S. District Judge Gonzalo Curiel was set to hear arguments on a motion by Trump's attorneys to postpone the trial slated to begin November 28th in San Diego. Curiel earlier this month denied a motion by Trump's legal team that sought to exclude campaign statements and videos as evidence. An attorney for the plaintiffs, Jason Forge, called the deal a great result, adding that $21 million of those $25 million will stay in San Diego to reimburse students for losses here. The rest will go to Trump University students in New York. Students in the class action case should ultimately receive at least half of their money back under the agreement. Trump did not admit liability under the settlement terms. He previously claimed Curiel's Mexican ancestry should disqualify him from the case due to bias after Trump pledged to deport undocumented Mexican immigrants, even though Curiel was born in the U.S. and is a citizen, so he could not be deported. The prospect of a trial in which questions about Trump's ethics and business practices would have been raised had cast a pall over Trump's election as he began preparations to be sworn in as president in January. Trump's lead attorney called the settlement agreement a victory for everybody, but it may be a loss for the public, who will now never learn whether or not the next president of the United States willfully defrauded students or violated federal racketeering laws. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway Studio in East County. The music that you've just heard on our intro today was performed by the fabulous San Diego Chorus and Orchestra. Today, my very special guest is Anthony Mastardo, the director of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now, it's been a couple of years since we interviewed you, and I understand that you have a marvelous holiday concert, Chansons de Noël, coming up on December 4th. Can you give us some details, first of all, about where that'll be and what people can expect?
The concert itself will be Sunday, December the 4th, and we perform at the College Avenue Baptist Church, a wonderful venue, seats about 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. We usually have experienced approximately 800 to 1,000 people in our concerts, and it is well attended. The acoustics are magnificent, and
marvelous.
Of course, with a full orchestra of 48 pieces and a 70-voice chorus, we produce some rather beautiful music, we think.
Now, the concert is going to be from 3 o'clock to 5 p.m., and you can get information on tickets at SanDiegoFestivalChorus.org. So, Anthony, can you tell us about what some of the works are that people can expect to hear? I understand it'll be a mix of classical and some contemporary and some holiday favorites.
Yes, our tradition is always to do something classical for the first half of the concert, which I direct. Mm-hmm. I have an assistant now. His name is Ron Council. He also teaches and works over at San Diego State University, a very fine musician. And he will direct the second part of our program, which always includes a lighter program of popular music or lighter classics. Mm-hmm. We do show tunes for the second half as well. Our concert for this December the 4th will feature two major works. One, a Te Deum that was written by Amadeus Mozart. He was 16 years old when he wrote this piece of music.
Yeah,
it's very short.
Such a child prodigy writing music,
yes,
starting
yes.
at, what, 3 years of age.
Yeah, I often told my chorus, I said, at 16, I was still learning how to walk.
There you go. And you're also doing the Christmas Oratorio.
Yes, the Christmas Oratorio by Camille Saint-Saëns, the composer of the magnificent organ symphony, number 3. He also, the composer of Carnival of the Animals, a lot of choral music. He's done the magnificent orchestrations and very popular tunes, particularly at Halloween, the Danse Macabre, which is oftentimes played. Mm-hmm. But he's well known. He's a magnificent pianist, a great organist. He lived in the middle 1800s.
Yeah, the Romantic era of music.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we heard some of that wonderful Christmas oratorio at the beginning of our show today, and you'll get to hear some more listeners at the end of this interview. So in addition to the classical works, you're also going to have some popular seasonal music. I love the names here for those of you folks that just can't resist all those holiday goodies. You have a piece called No Time to Diet.
Exactly.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Going to Bethlehem and all
going
sorts of
Bethlehem,
other...
exactly.
Nice.
Wonderful pieces of music.
Will there be traditional Christmas carols that people recognize
yes,
as well?
Yes, they will recognize many of them, done in an interesting form, a lot of new arrangements.
Mm.
So, for instance, Deck the Hall will be, for instance, a piece traditionally sung, at church concerts or whatever, but this one is actually written in 7/8 time.
Wow.
It's a very complex rhythmical kind of thing, but very enlightening and fun to sing.
Oh, I'm looking forward. I can't wait to go see that and hear that. Now, your chorus and orchestra has a very fascinating history. I understand that you're celebrating your 15th anniversary this year, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, we began September the 11th, 2001.
A very auspicious date with the date of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, of course.
In fact, how
did that affect your opening?
Well, it did affect us in some sort of way. We happened to be in Frankfurt, Germany at the time, vacationing, and we saw on the news and the TV the planes slamming into the towers, the Twin Towers.
That must have been horrifying.
It just was devastating. I mean, when we saw what was happening, we couldn't believe it. My wife and I were actually trapped for 3 days.
Yeah, they had grounded all of the planes
in and out of the United States. In fact, they rerouted many of the airplanes. Our granddaughter, who was with us, deviated. She ended up in Nova Scotia.
Oh, my.
And the airplanes actually couldn't even land because they were afraid what was going to happen. They turned them around and sent them back to Europe.
Wow.
It was really devastating.
Yeah.
But anyway, that date, of course, sticks in my mind, but we had a rehearsal scheduled for that very first day. And we had to make plans, of course, to cancel it and reschedule
sure,
it.
Yeah.
But we have survived
the show
15 wonderful years. And so we will be celebrating our 15th anniversary this coming December the 4th. Yes.
Fabulous. Mm. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to start this marvelous festival chorus and orchestra.
Well, I do have a musical background. I attended the American Conservatory of Music, received my bachelor's degree there in applied piano. I attended DePaul University, received my Master of Music there. I attended Northern Illinois University and received my administrative degree in education. So in addition to being a principal for 35 years, I also delved in music during that period of time, conducted church choirs, formed community choruses. In fact, we began with another festival chorus name. It is the Harper College Festival Chorus, Community Chorus in Palatine, Illinois. We started with 35 members originally. We ended up with 150 at the time of my retirement in 1993. And after moving to California here in 1998, I missed something, and of course that was my music.
Sure.
So we started another group.
Beautiful. And it's just grown and grown since then, and of course you've added an orchestra in addition to a chorus. Now, can you give us information about the members of the chorus, if people are interested in perhaps joining it as a singer, or for that matter, joining the orchestra? What are the qualifications? Do you have to be a professional musician with a resume a mile long, or can anyone with some musical talent and interest audition?
Very good. Yes, we do not have major restrictions. If someone has sung in a church choir or a community chorus in the past, they're a prime member for a group. If they've studied a little bit of music, that also helps. We oftentimes have people who just simply walk in off the street just because they see music they enjoy for the second part of our program, and they come and they are trapped And they're actually invited and excited about the first part of the chorus program as well.
Beautiful.
And so we introduced them to a lot of classical music. Over the years, we have performed over 129 major choral works.
My goodness.
In that period of time. And about half of them are classical music, mm-hmm. and the other half, of course, lighter music.
How many concerts do you do each year?
We perform two major concerts, one in December before the holidays, and the other one in May, a spring concert. In addition to our major performances, we also do a lot of outreach performances. We also do a lot of traveling abroad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've given concerts in the Balkans, in Scandinavia, in Dubrovnik, in England.
Mm.
We perform outreach performances there.
Now, how much time commitment is there, you know, per week or per month for the people that are involved in this? And is it a volunteer mm-hmm. activity? Mm-hmm. And how do you
yes.
fund the travel?
It's about 3 or 4 months between concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us approximately about 12 rehearsals
mm-hmm.
totally. And in that period of time, we're able to produce the music that we do.
Beautiful.
We hire non-professional musicians, although some of them have played in a number of different organizations here in San Diego, the San Diego Concert Band, the Tiferet Jewish Orchestra, mm-hmm. directed by David Amos, a very fine orchestra.
Yes.
And also other musicians from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are business people, but also play instruments.
Marvelous.
And they're thrilled to join us, and we have a wonderful group of people. We mm-hmm. call it our musical family.
How do you fund the travel overseas? Do you do fundraising for that, or do the members need to... It'll pay their own way? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just returned from an Alaskan concert cruise. We performed two concerts aboard the ship, the Coral Princess, and then we performed another 4 or 5 different concerts throughout the travels through Alaska. The highlight of our performance and travels was in the Denali National Park. We performed in the magnificent resort there.
Wonderful
with the backdrop
place.
Of
yes.
Mount McKinley. It was just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It's a spectacular mm-hmm. natural setting. I've been there a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the choral members, are they volunteer or is that paid?
Our choral members are all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
We rehearse every Monday night from 7 to 9:15. And, of course, just before our concerts, we stretch it out a little bit. We have some extra rehearsals.
Sure.
But totally, we have about 70 members, sometimes a few more, sometimes a few less, depending on the interest of their musical tastes and also what we schedule for performance.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listeners, it's such a wonderful group. If you have the opportunity, it's a great organization to support and go out and listen to and enjoy the Chansons de Noël concert coming up on December 4th with the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra at the College Avenue Baptist Church. We've been speaking with Anthony Mastardo, who is the director of the Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know that we haven't already talked about today?
Yes. Well, we welcome new members. That's the heart of our organization. Our main purpose and goal is to hopefully introduce people to new music. I know that oftentimes there are standards that are performed for the holidays, you know, such as the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
But we always look forward to introducing people to new classics.
Yes.
And new popular music, show tunes, and that kind of thing. So we're always looking for interested members that would enjoy an experience where they are being introduced to new music and also have a wonderful time by meeting other friends and making new acquaintances. Again, we rehearse every Monday night at the Hillsdale Middle School. We rehearse from 7 to 9:15, and we look forward to having you come.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wonderful group of people who are anxious to see new members. So,
and based right here in East County. Listeners, if you want to get more information about either how to audition or join the chorus and orchestra or get tickets for this marvelous Chansons de Noël concert coming up, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org or you can go to our website at eastcountymagazine.org and check out our arts and music section and find it right there. Anthony, I want to thank you very much for joining us again today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure.
Praise ye the Lord, O hosts, sing his salvation. This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Pearl Harbor Day is coming up on December 7th, a day to recall the worst attack on U.S. soil when the Japanese Air Force bombed an American Air Force base in Hawaii during World War II. There are very few survivors of Pearl Harbor left to tell their tales, but on Saturday, November 26th, at 10 a.m., Pearl Harbor survivor Stuart Headley, a Navy veteran, will give a presentation at the Casa de Oro Library in Spring Valley. Headley was aboard a U.S. ship that was bombed and will share harrowing tales of survival and heroism. The Spring Valley Lions Club, a co-sponsor of the event, along with friends of the Casa de Oro Library, will be collecting donations of used eyeglasses and hearing aids to help people in need. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, the Network for Social Justice, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health alert. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has announced a voluntary recall of all hummus dip products made by the Sabra Company after Listeria was found at the manufacturing facility. Consumers with any product with a best before date of January 23, 2017 or earlier should throw away the product or contact Sabra for a refund. You can find a best before date on the lid of each package. The recall includes all hummus products made by Sabra except organic hummus. The recall also does not include other Sabra products such as guacamole, salsa, or Greek yogurt dip. Sabra's CEO, Shally Cheval, says consumer safety is a top priority and that a factory-wide cleaning and sanitation has been done to address the problem. Listeria is an organism which can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections in young children, frail or elderly people, and others with weakened immune systems. Healthy individuals may suffer only short-term symptoms such as a high fever, severe headaches, stiffness, nausea, abdominal pain, and diarrhea. Listeria infection can also cause miscarriages and stillbirths among pregnant women. For questions or information on how to get a refund, you can visit the website at sabrahummusrecall.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features
Pomegranate Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy, Jesus Christ Superstar at San Diego State, Breakfast with Santa in Santee, a Jingle Paws Walk for Pets, Lakeside Spirit on Main, and a country Christmas in Julian.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The largest outdoor ice rink in Southern California is now open at Viejas through the holiday season until January 29th. Under the glow of holiday lights, guests and visitors can glide around the rink or enjoy seasonal goodies. You can feel the cool Pacific Mountain air on your face while you bunny hop, camel spin, and swizzle your way around the ice rink in Alpine. For details, you can visit viejas.com. If you're looking for an unusual way to spend Thanksgiving weekend, you can stop by Pomegranate Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona. The sixth annual event on November 25th, 26th, and 27th will include camel rides, feeding pomegranates to camels, family-friendly shows, and a race featuring pardoned turkeys. You can also do holiday shopping at a gift shop featuring such items as camel's milk, soaps, and lotions. For details, you can visit cameldairy.com.
In honor of Shop Small Business Saturday, a holiday pop-up market will be held on November 26th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. outside the Upper Hand Salon at 13910 Lyons Valley Road in Hamul. Guests can shop for unique gifts including handmade hats, scarves, and gloves, gift baskets, jams, delis, and tamales, jewelry, fine art, holiday floral arrangements and vintage collections. A fashion show will take place at 1:30 p.m. The Upper Hand Salon will offer gift certificates for beauty services. A holiday pajama drive will also be held. Bring donations of new PJs for children ages 1 to 16 to help make a kid in need feel cozy for the holidays. For more information, you can contact Lisa Seback at 619-933-8262.
You can enjoy holiday musical performances at Parkway Plaza on the Macy's stages starting November 26th through December 24th. Upcoming performances include the Southwestern College Big Band on November 26th and the Celtic Nations Pipe Band on December 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. There are more musical groups and additional events coming up at Parkway Plaza in El Cajon, including visits by Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus. For a full schedule of events, you can visit shoppingparkwayplaza.com/events.
Christmas comes to Julian every year in an old-fashioned way that will make you picture sleigh rides, chestnuts roasting on an open fire, and just maybe Jack Frost painting the whole town white. This year's Julian Country Christmas will be held on November 26th from 2 to 7 p.m. in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. The Country Christmas event kicks off the holiday season with the annual lighting of the town's huge living Christmas tree presented by the Julian Merchants Association. This is a popular event drawing hundreds of visitors to gather at Pioneer Park to watch the lighting and visit with Santa. Located in the Cuyamaca Mountains, this historic gold mining town is apt to have a chill in the air. The fragrant scent of wood fires and a glimpse of snow-capped mountains around the town. The holiday season in Julian also offers an opportunity to shop at small boutiques and craft shows for one-of-a-kind gifts and the town's famous apple pies. For details, see julianca.com.
The pop rock musical Jesus Christ Superstar will be presented at San Diego State University's Don Powell Theater on December 1 through 4. Performances will be at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, plus a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday. This explosive psychedelic concert with music by Andrew Lloyd Webber is a collaboration between the schools of theater, television, and film and music and dance, telling a universally known biblical story through the unusual perspective of Judas Iscariot. The performance features the SDSU Aztecs Concert and Chamber Choirs, as well as the San Diego State Symphony Orchestra. For tickets, you can visit the SDSU Theater Department.
On Saturday, December 3rd, the ACES Foundation will be hosting the 6th Annual Jingle Paws 1K and 5K Fun Walk from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College. Registration is from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. The ACES Foundation's mission is to support the El Cajon Animal Shelter. They have helped over 20 animals become adoptable by paying the surgeries, dental cleanings, and eye surgery in 2016. There will also be a Santa's Village immediately after the walk with doggy goodies and pet food vendors, pictures with Santa, refreshments, and a silent auction. The Santa's Adoption Village will have local rescue organizations and adoptable pets. Shots for pets will also be available for vaccines. To register or get more information, visit acesfoundation.org.
You can take your kids to breakfast with Santa Claus at the Lakeside Community Center on Vine Street on Saturday, December 3rd from 8 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Lakeside firefighters and sheriff deputies will be serving up the community breakfast. In addition to meeting Santa, children can enjoy other activities as well at this festive community event.
The Lakeside Chamber of Commerce invites you to enjoy the spirit of Christmas on Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside on Saturday, December 3rd from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Santa and his elves are hard at work getting ready for Christmas at this annual event that attracts and delights people of all ages. There will be an atmosphere of an old-fashioned hometown Christmas. The event features all the sights and sounds of Christmas, including local school performances, Santa Claus, food and drinks, kids' activities, jumps, rides, booths, crafters, and lighting the community Christmas tree.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
On Sunday, Jimmy Johnson won his 7th Sprint Cup Championship and his first in 3 years at the Ford EcoBoost 400 at Homestead Miami Speedway in Miami. The 41-year-old El Cajon native is now tied with Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty as a 7-time Premier Series champion. Johnson is also now the youngest 7-time winner. Petty was 42 when he won in 1979, and Earnhardt was 43 in 1994. "This is beyond exciting," team owner Rick Hendrick said. "I'm so proud of him." This has been a tough season for Johnson. He experienced the longest winless streak of his career at 25 starts. Records are a mark, and they set something for everyone to shoot at, Petty said. Jimmy and his team have done that tonight. They set a goal to get where they are, and circumstances and fate made it a reality. They did what they needed to do, and now they are at 7 championships. Congratulations to him and his team. Jimmy is a good champion, and this is really good for our sport. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
This is Jim Brewster from the East County Magazine show on KNSJ with a weekend weather update. Sunday night's storm brought heavy rains to much of drought-stricken San Diego County. Descanso and Cuyamaca received more than an inch of rain, and over an inch and a half fell on Palomar Mountain. Ramona and Julian received just under an inch, while Santee, Campo, and Boulevard all got about a half inch of rain, though less than a quarter of an inch was received at San Diego's Lindbergh Field. With the storm passed, sunny skies and highs of 65 are forecast for Thanksgiving weekend, making this an ideal time to visit East County's mountains to view some fall foliage, pack a turkey sandwich picnic, and go hiking on one of our region's many scenic trails, go fishing at a local lake, stop off at a winery to savor harvest season, or visit historic Julian and sample one of the town's famous apple pies while giving thanks for the bounties of nature in our backcountry.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. County supervisors have adopted new rules aimed at making sure people are safe when they visit our region's hopping number of breweries and wineries and decide to have a burger with their brew or more than just cheese with their wine. Supervisors adopted an ordinance and two new permits that will apply food safety rules found in restaurants to caterers who are hired to serve food at breweries, wineries, and other businesses. Supervisor Diane Jacob says the rules would be the first of their kind in California, serving as a model ordinance for other counties and cities. She says the ordinance establishes more flexibility and opportunities for caterers, food vendors, wineries, and breweries, adding, "In the end, it's going to help support, enhance, and expand our local farm and ag tourism efforts that we have been so excited about." But some local vintners are voicing concerns over potentially high costs of complying with the new requirements. Terry Kearns at Ramona Ranch Vineyard and Winery told East County Magazine, "We are still wrapping our heads around these changes and what the impact will be to small businesses, but it seems to put us at a disadvantage." The winery's co-owner, Nicole Moore, is president of the Ramona Valley Vineyards Association. The ordinance will allow caterers to handle the food service for wineries, breweries, and businesses that don't have full food service capabilities of their own, while making sure customers are protected by assuring foods are heated and refrigerated correctly, and that food preparers and servers have equipment for proper hygiene. The ordinance is scheduled to be heard again by the Board of Supervisors on December 14th for a second reading and public hearing. It would then take effect in 30 days if the Board approves that second reading. The county's Department of Environmental Health recommended these new rules after conducting a 3-month pilot study of 25 catering events at wineries, breweries, and private functions. Environmental Health staff reported that they saw some common problems during the study that could increase bacteria and potential for people to get sick with foodborne illnesses. Those problems included food servers using ice coolers, which warm up when ice melts, rather than portable refrigerators to try to keep foods safely chilled, and the study found that less than half of food servers had access to sinks to wash their hands or clean utensils and equipment. The board's action will create two new types of permits. Breweries, wineries, and other businesses that want to use caterers to provide customers food will have to get host facility permits that assure they have readily accessible sinks for food servers as well as electricity, hot water, and commercial restrooms. Caterers will be allowed to get direct sales catering permits that will expand the traditional definition of catering from just serving private affairs to being able to sell directly to the public. The permits will also require caterers to have refrigeration and hand washing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery.
Help is needed to recover two golf carts stolen last week from the Tiernanog Horse Rescue Center east of Alpine or to purchase replacements, the need is critical. Since one of the carts is used to carry feed for the horses, the owner posted shock and disbelief on Facebook, stating it takes a special kind of person to steal from horses rescued from abuse and neglect. We do what we do on bare bones, no frills budget. Every dollar we raise goes into caring for our horses and other animals. She adds, obviously, this is going to be a hard loss for us to recover from. We do not have theft insurance, and it looks like it will cost close to $15,000 to replace our two carts. Tiernanog, named after an Irish legend, partners with the County of San Diego Animal Shelter to take in abused and neglected horses relinquished by their owners. Since the partnership began, not a single horse that can medically be saved has been euthanized thanks to Tiernanog's dedication in nursing these animals back to health. To learn more or to make a donation, you can visit horsesoftiernanog.org/reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, the network for social justice. This is Rebecca Williamson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
We at East County Magazine wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving weekend as we usher in the start of the holiday season here in East County. And now we hope our readers will enjoy this excerpt from a U.S. Army Band Christmas concert back in 2009. It's got a little bit of country in it for our East County listeners. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, Jim Hannibal, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio.